Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. I sure did. I actually went and played at my Friday Night Magic. Well, they were doing Conspiracy 2, because that's out for Friday Night Magic. And they also had a side event of standard Winnabox single elimination. So I was like, let's do this. So I took my black-white deck, and I paid $10 to enter, and I lost the first round. So that was it. Single elimination. I was out, and that was my Friday Night Magic. So it hurts. Obviously, it stings a little bit. Obviously, nobody likes losing money like that, me least of all. But it's part of Magic. I knew the risk going into it. And like I say, you don't win every time, but you can learn every time. So what did I learn? I learned that sometimes you play as tight as possible, do your best, and you still don't get there. Now, that's not necessarily a new lesson, but Magic has the tendency to teach us lessons that we've already learned before, over and over and over again. Before we dive into the interview, I want to say that last weekend, there were three Grand Prix, super exciting, all modern, one in Lille, one in Guangzhou, and one in Indianapolis. So I'm really excited to reach out to the top eight of each of these three Grand Prix, invite them onto the show and hear how they did it, what they did, what modern looks like now that we have a new set, and really break down that format. So I'm looking forward to that. And last but not least, I want to bring your attention to a really cool thing that Wizards of the Coast is doing right now. They're doing a fundraiser through Extra Life for the Miracle Children's Hospital Network. And in support of this, they're doing a few really cool things. The first one is on September 2nd. It's called Ask Wizards. You can go to tinyurl.com/askwizards. Again, tinyurl.com/askwizards. And if you donate there, you have the opportunity to ask Richard Garfield a question, who is the creator of Magic the Gathering, Mark Rosewater, the lead designer of Magic the Gathering, Melissa Lee, who also works at Wizards, and Ian Duke, who is the designer of the upcoming Kaladesh set, as well as Kelly Diggs, who is one of the creative designers. So all of these people will be on a panel, and you get to ask them a question. And that, again, is happening on September 2nd, so you can go to tinyurl.com/askwizards, donate there, and be able to ask them a question. The follow-on event to that will happen on September 17th, which is a Saturday. Wizards will be doing a 24-hour stream. And again, this is all in support of the Miracle Children's Hospital Network. And so I think it'd be amazing to show our support as the Prodigy community. And so mtgprotutor.com/donate is where you can go to support this. Again, it's a charity fundraiser that Wizards is putting on. As gamers, we want to show that we care and that we can give back. So if you feel so inclined, mtgprotutor.com/donate is where you can go to support that. And that will be from now until September 16th, because the 24-hour stream will be on September 17th. So there you have it. A lot of cool things going on. Three Grand Prix last weekend. We'll bring the guests on for sure. Ask Wizards coming up on September 7th. tinyurl.com/askwizards for that. And then Ask Wizards plus the 24-hour stream is in support of the fundraiser Wizards is doing for the Miracle Children's Hospital Network. And you can go to mtgprotutor.com/donate if you want to join with other prodigies as we show our support as gamers. Well, that's it for the top of the interview stuff. I'm really excited to bring our guest onto the show today. He has a wealth of experience, so without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest spends most of his time as a musician and graphic designer, but still makes room for Magic. He has two Star City Games Legacy Top 8s and one Grand Prix Top 8. He goes through spurts of streaming and is looking to make a run for the Pro Players Club, starting with the recent Grand Prix Portland. Coming to us from Roseburg, Oregon, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Eric Carson. Eric, how you doing today?
I'm living the dream.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Sweet. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Eric, you can find him on social media. He is on Twitter at Platypus Island, and you can look him up there, ask him Magic questions. That's where you'll find him talking about Magic. So, and also you can check out his stream, which is sporadic, but you might see him pop up and learn from him. So, Eric, we want to dive into you and your story and get to know you a little bit better. So, first of all, what do you have going on outside of Magic? We mentioned that you're a musician and a graphic designer. So, tell us a little bit about that.
So music, it started with when I was a kid, like 14 years old. I found a flyer to a local rock show or whatever, local metal show, I guess, on the ground in like a ditch. And it was at like an American Legion Hall just in town here. So I went to that, caught the DIY bug, DIY punk ethics and all that stuff. got into that, started going to every show that I could that was happening locally. And then when the guy that was doing that moved away for like college and to have his own life, to work on that, I started booking concerts. So when I was like 16, I started doing that and did that from 2005 to 2010. And then I stopped booking shows, stopped being a concert promoter, so I could start going on tour with my music. Like, I'd play some of the shows, and I'd play, you know, around town, wherever, you know, I'd play, but not really going to do anything unless I'm on tour as well. So I started touring 2010, and when this kind of ties into magic, like, when I was going on, booking my first tour, my best friend was going with me, and I was like, dude, we should buy some magic intro decks and learn to play this so we can have something to do when we're on the road. And so we did. I talked him into it, and we went and bought a couple of starter decks. Mine was like an intro deck from original Zendikar with like Sphinx of Uthun. Is that the guy at the Shroud? He lets you look at the top card of your library anytime you want?
Sure.
I think that's him. He's really good, you're right? No, anyways, that was my starter deck. And we bought like some of those energy drinks that are like shaped in like mana potion bottles. I don't know. And then we went to my grandma's house and went into the basement and just hung out in my grandma's basement playing magic and learning how to play. But yeah,
that's awesome.
Just started touring. Ever since I've been touring, for most years I've been touring, you know, 6 to 9 months out of the year.
That's incredible. So on the road doing your music, and what instruments do you play?
Guitar, primarily.
Awesome. That's so fun. You're touring all the time and living the dream, like you said. That's great. That's absolutely great. So what was that very first set that you came in on? Was it Zendikar? That's your very first time playing Magic?
When I bought the intro deck, it was Zendikar and Shards of Alara. But I didn't like... I kind of like... After that tour, kind of fell out of it and then got back into it after Mirrodin came out like a year later and started buying boosters and like actually learning the game, like for like, getting into it and starting going to FNM after New Phyrexia came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right about the time I came back. That's really cool. What's been your favorite set since then?
Original Innistrad.
Excellent.
That set was just awesome. Like, my first competitive deck right before that was Valakut, and that was a sweet deck. But and so, like, Innistrad came out, and the set looked really cool. Like, all these cards are really neat. You know, had the gothic horror theme, and, you know, I grew up watching horror films and, you know, stuff like that, and action movies, sci-fi. Not that that's the same as horror or anything, but, like, it captured my imagination for sure. And so,
right.
Like... I was just very excited about the set. The FNM I went to the day that Innistrad came out, I made a spray-painted t-shirt that said Rip Valakut.
Yeah.
But,
and along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
Capsize. Love
what
Capsize.
Is that, for those of us who don't know, and how much does it cost, and what does it do, and why do you like it?
Yeah. It's I don't remember what set it's originally from. I think maybe Tempest.
Yeah, it's Tempest.
Nice. It's a 3-mana instant. It's a 1 and 2 blue, and it has buyback for 3 of any color. And it's boomerang. It just return target permanent to its owner's hand. So for 6 mana, you can just return a permanent to their hand. Just like on every instep, just keep doing that. And if once you get to like 12 mana, you get to do it twice a turn.
Excellent. That's a good card. I remember my friend pulling that out most recently in an EDH deck, and it's just. There's mana aplenty in EDH decks, so he was bouncing the world, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I keep trying to find room for it in my cube, but it's just a little, probably not good enough for that.
What cube do you have?
I just have a cube that I made myself. It started like based on like the Magic Online cube, and it's just slowly faltered from there. Most recently, the most recent overhaul I did, like I cut White Weenie and was trying like an Enchantment, Opalescent, Starfield of Nyx. Type of archetype in there.
That's really neat. I just built a cube, a Shadows Over Innistrad cube, and my big vision is for it to be like an Innistrad cube, you know, old and new. But right now it's just Shadows, and so little by little, I need to play it a couple times to figure out what I want to tweak, and then I'll start introducing things from the old Innistrad and Eldritch Moon and kind of tweak it from there. So
step one, spider spawning.
Yeah, step two, Ishkana.
Yeah, nice. Pretty good.
Yeah, that'd be pretty fun. So is there anything from music that you bring to Magic or vice versa? Is there any crossover or overlap?
I mean, with music, you have to... A couple things with music and touring in general. Like, you have to plan really far in advance. So that can translate to Magic, even though sometimes when it comes to like what deck I'm playing, I do wing it or wait too long. To figure out what I'm doing or like to nail down a sideboard plan and such. But There's that, and then just like having to adapt on the fly with unforeseen circumstances occurring, such as, I don't know, running out of gas on tour, your car breaking down when you're on tour.
Yeah.
Maybe your guitar maybe you break your guitar while you're playing a show. You just got to keep going. Or just breaking a string during the performance. You just keep playing through the song, even though it sounds bad because you're missing a string and that string's muddying up the rest of the sound. So, like, just adapting on the fly like that, I think that's pretty important in magic, especially in, like, limited, but
yeah.
Solve that.
Yeah, definitely the planning ahead, even outside of the game of magic, that comes into play when you're booking your stay and planning where you're going to be and when you're going to be there for events and stuff like that. I can see how that is almost a direct translation, because you probably have to do similar things in booking and planning ahead real life places for your music as well.
Definitely.
Cool. So we got to know a little bit about you and how you started, and we would love to hear, what was an early aspect of magic that you struggled with, but that you eventually overcame?
Good question. Let's see. Well, just originally with building decks, I didn't really comprehend like a mana curve or like thinking about the deck as a whole. Just thinking, you know, when I first started buying cards or whatever, I was just like, well, this card's really cool. It's a 2/3 guy for 4 mana with landfall, gain 2 life or something. Blazing Gladeheart, I think that's about what he is. This card's awesome, just jam it in this deck. So, like, figuring out, like, deck construction, how that actually makes sense, and considering mana curve, and thinking about the deck's overall plan. I guess I kind of adapted to that quickly, but, like, that, you know, took a good few months to, like, figure that out. And then just, like, looking at people's decks online or whatever, and figuring out, well, why aren't they playing this card? Like, I really like Urabrask. Why is Valakut not playing that card in Magic? Like, when Innistrad came out, I just went straight to a blue-black control deck, and that's a very different kind of animal. And just learning that I don't need to kill every creature I see, I don't have to counter everything I see, I can, like, use my life total as a resource and try to get extra value out of my cards. Maybe hold my Doomblade and then use my Wrath of God so that I have the Doomblade after the Wrath.
Yes. Example. And, you know, you just described almost the exact scenario that I went through on one of just recently at Grand Prix Portland. I was playing Black-White Control. I don't know if this would have changed the outcome of the game, because I think I was getting steamrolled anyways, but there was a turn that I cast a Deadweight and a Grasp of Darkness to kill 2 creatures, when I also had the mana for Languish, which I had in hand. So I should have just cast the Languish, and then, you know, 2-for-1 my opponent, and then I still would have had those 2 removal spells in hand. Now, I say it might not have mattered, because from then on, I don't think he played a single, you know, 2 toughness creature for the rest of the game, so that Deadweight might have just been Deadweight in my hand. But at least I would have had, you know, an instant speed removal that could have, you know, addressed something. And we don't know, you know, but that's like a real-world example of what you just said. Different decks have different styles, and as a control player, I'm learning that as well. Or rather, when I play control decks, I'm learning that as well, that, hey, sometimes, like you said, use your life as a resource. You don't need to kill the one thing right now when you might be able to get a 2 or 3-for-1 with a board wipe later on. It's a fine balance, because, you know, maybe they're playing like mono white and they just dump a whole bunch of things, and if you wait one turn to try and get 3 or 4 things, then they might overrun you or whatever. So it's definitely a dance and a balance.
Yeah, just been trying to comprehend the best way to use your resources can be a challenging feat for sure.
So what makes Magic fun for you, Eric? Why do you play?
Well, one of the things that brought me into it at first was just, like, you know, I was playing a lot of first-person shooters or, you know, Call of Duty, whatever, that type of stuff with my friends. And that stuff, while there is a challenge of sorts to those types of games, they're overall fairly mindless. And, like, what attracted me to Magic was the strategy and the, you know, the amount that it would exercise my brain. Or at least that I thought it would, and it did, and it has, and it still does. Just like that aspect, like the chess aspect of the game, or even just the bluffing and the poker aspect of the game. That was a big part of what attracted me to Magic the Gathering.
And how do you maintain having fun in the game and also being competitive? Because sometimes players go all in on the competitive aspect and they forget about why they got into it and what makes Magic fun for them. What are your thoughts on that? How do you be competitive and have fun?
Yeah, that can be... That's a good question. When you're testing with your friends, that should be fun. When you're getting ready for a big tournament, should be exciting. And, you know, just sharing that experience with your friends should help the enjoyment level come up, even, you know, and get your mind away from the grind and that aspect of magic. But like for me, I you know, like if I'm going to a Grand Prix, say Grand Prix Indianapolis in a couple of weeks, which I'm going to. It's a modern format, and there's a lot of decks in the world that you can play in modern. So at my local game store, like I'll play a different modern deck every Monday. It'll just be some random brew or like a cool looking list I see from Magic Online results. A deck that I would never take to a Grand Prix, or at least not take it blind. I would never take it to a tournament that mattered, but it looks like it'd be fun. So I'm gonna go ahead and jam it at this local game store event, or, you know, my friend wins a PPTQ with Dredge, for example. This happened a few weeks ago. He did that in Chicago area. He shipped me the list, and I took it to a PPTQ, and without having played a single game with it, I made top four of the PPTQ and split in the top four the cash with everybody. Then my friend beat me, and then he won the thing, and I got the RPTQ invite. But that played that deck as like for fun, and it's not a deck that I would take to a Grand Prix. Especially right now, since it's gained a lot of hype since that weekend. But, like, I use the smaller events to still just play a deck that I think would be for fun to play, not caring whether I win or lose. Like, I took a shared fate deck to my local game store for a modern night once, back in January, where the whole win condition is I draw your cards and kill you with your cards, and my deck has nothing in it. Like, I think I saw it on YouTube or something. You know, just doing something for fun, regardless whether I win or not.
I like that. So, understanding where and when you can just kind of let loose and not be so dialed in. So that way, those times that you are dialed in, you know, the couple weeks before a big event that you're really practicing and playing, and then when you're at that event, you know, you have your game face on and like you're really doing the competitive magic thing, but then you're also let loose and understand, hey, there's other times that I can just have fun.
Yeah, that, and you know, that's what Cube is for.
yeah, no kidding. So as you've gone through your Magic journey, is there anyone that you've looked up to as a player that has really helped you, you know, develop?
Hands down, Reed Duke. That the first year that I started going to like Grand Prix and really grinding, like I started working it into my tour schedule. Like the weekends I'd go to the Grand Prix, or if there's no Grand Prix that makes sense to go to, I'll go to the nearest Open. Just try to fit all this in there. And that first year in 2012, I mean, that's really when Reed Duke started gaining notoriety and becoming the name that he is. Not that he didn't have accomplishments before, but that's where his name really like grew himself. And for a while there, towards the end of that year, we were both playing Bant Control with Elixir of Immortality and Sphinx's Revelation. And, like, I talked to him at a random tournament, don't remember which one, just approached him, was like, hey, Reed, you know, I like that you've been playing this deck, I like, you know, the articles you've been writing about it, what you've been saying, here's some things that I've been thinking about the deck, and I've been doing with the deck, really love the deck, like what you're saying about it, all that stuff. And he just showed me a level of mutual respect, and just treated me like I was a human, not like how, maybe, I won't name any names, but not like, you know, some other pros, or maybe just other people. Like, you can apply this to other aspects, like musicians. You bump into, I don't know, Bon Jovi on the street, and you're like, hey dude, I got this guitar riff I want to show you. Get out of here, kid, you're bothering me. You know, you get like that kind of vibe from people sometimes. Like, their ego gets a little big, and it's off-putting. Whatever. Reed Duke showed me respect, and he was helpful, and he treated me as if I was his equal. And, you know, and I'd bump into him at tournaments since then, you know, in that same year or like within the next year. And he'd be like, hey, Eric, how's it going? Do you got any tech for this matchup? Any advice on something I could try for this matchup? And even to this day, like, I'll see him at the Grand Prix. We're like, hey, Eric, how's it going? And my last album, it's been a couple years since it came out. I put him I thanked him in the liner notes because he was just a major influence for me in 2012 and 2013, specifically in regards to Magic. And in life, just him being a good person.
Yeah, good person. Man, that's awesome. I love hearing stories like that of how personable some of these names that we look up to, you know, really are, and just how nice they are. And like you said, like remembering you and just asking your thoughts, your opinion. Hey, do you have any tech on this and that? And not letting the ego get in the way. That's awesome. Those are the kind of people that we can look to and that we want to emulate, you know, and realize it doesn't matter what our accomplishments are. You know, we can always make time for people and be a good person. So that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I'm really happy that Reed Duke is such a good guy and that he's helped you develop in Magic and in life as well. That's awesome. So all of our journeys are unique. We all have highs. We all have lows. We would love to hone in on two moments in your journey. The first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience. So take us there. Tell us that story. We want to be right there with you, experiencing what you felt.
All right, that's a tough one. Let's see here. Well, this is kind of a mixed bag here. Okay, so I top aided a Star City Games Open in 2012 in August. It was in Denver, Colorado. My first accomplishment of any kind. So that was great. I went undefeated through the Swiss, double drew into top eight. Cool. I played some blue-red Delver deck that was not very traditional. It trimmed on some of the burn, had like exactly two copies of Days, had one Sulfuric Vortex, one or two Vendilion Clicks and a Jace the Mind Sculptor, not to mention four Wasteland and only 18 land, and is still a Delver deck. Very weird numbers on my cards. In my mind, I tuned it to beat Miracles. Anyways, the quarterfinals, I played against a Sneak Attack deck, and I don't remember if it was just the same deck or if it was I think it was the same person that I had played earlier in the Swiss. He ended up beating me in game three, but I made a major mistake in game two just before they moved us. We finished game two and then they moved us to the camera because we were the last ones going. But in game two, like, I have the game won. I just got to make sure, you know, he's got one card in hand or something. And as long as he doesn't resolve anything that matters, I win the game. So I have my Jace the Mind Sculptor on the board. I have two Spell Pierce and a Force and a blue card. And then two Lightning Bolts. And I brainstorm with Jace and I keep the Lightning Bolts and put the two Spell Pierces on top of my deck. Don't know why. All I need these two Lightning Bolts to finish the job next turn. They do nothing right now. And anyways, my opponent draws something. He plays the spell. I counter it. He Pyroblasts. And he has three mana or something. And no more cards. I'm like, well, if I had these two Spell Pierces, I win right now, and I move on to face Joe and the Simmies. But I didn't. So, I mean, that moment, that was a big learning moment, just, you know, misevaluating my role or just not thinking thoroughly enough and just getting excited and rushing myself. And, yeah, I mean, it's not the biggest gut-wrenching feeling, but I definitely lost because of a thing that I could have easily avoided, and I was even actually actively thinking about how to win, and then I just put the wrong cards back on purpose. Like, I don't need these. What am I doing? I got Lightning Bolts.
Yeah. Man. So moving forward, like, what changed and how did you really get better because of that experience?
Yeah, I just slowed down my pace of play and think through things a bit more thoroughly and meticulously. Maybe sometimes I overthink them a little too hard at this point, but just slowed it down and just thought out my lines a bit more thoroughly before making a decision.
Slow down and think through your plays. I like that. So the flip side, the other side of the coin, are our highs. And we want to hear your proudest Magic moment to date. Take us there.
Well, it was Grand Prix LA, hearing my name announced over the speakers for top eight. Just getting to that point in general. Like, it was a day one. There was a lot of stuff going on. I'm sure we'll talk about the tournament as a whole later or something, but yeah, day one, you know, I had a lot of luck to get to day two. You know, some opponents made some misplays, I made some misplays and didn't get punished, some things like that. But day two, not to say day one didn't, but day two was almost all just really good, really hard matches, really good opponents, really good skilled players, and just really tough matches that half of them could have went either way, based on this top deck or them deciding to play around this or that and not whatever, just a lot of that. And so when I won round 15 of the tournament, I was X and 2, so 13-2, and I was just really excited, and just I did it. It was kind of like a validation, a little bit of like, hey, I feel like I'm a decent player, but I've never done anything, so I must not be, right? That's not how it works, but just waiting to hear my name, the anxiety and like the anticipation to hear them announce top eight and to see if I made it in, because there was two or three people that were not going to make top eight with that record. Just too many people. It was like nine of us, I think. Like X2 started at third place and it went down to, I believe, 11th. So yeah, like the second I won that match, a guy that's a friend of a friend that I don't really know very well, can't even remember his name right now, he comes up to me instantly. I'm still sitting in my chair, still picking up my cards and like kind of laughing like, oh my God, I did this, in disbelief. He comes up to me, he's like, oh man, great job. Congrats on your Pro Tour invite. That's so awesome. You're not going to top eight. You're definitely not going to top eight. I did the math. You're definitely not top eighting, but good job. That felt bad. It's like, come on, man, wait 5 minutes.
What the heck? I didn't.
Yeah, he was wrong. But yeah, then they announce all the names, and like with every name that passed, I'm like, all right, there's still hope. And they announce the seventh place, not my name, and eighth place gets announced, Eric Carson. I didn't think I would be like overly emotional or excited or like show anything, but I just start jumping and yelling and hugging these friends and acquaintances that I had made in that like 20 minutes or like that I've had for a long time. Ironically, the friend that I've had the longest, like my best friend who came down there with me, we drove down there from here, it's a 12-hour drive, he was the last person I interacted with in that burst of joy. It's kind of funny.
That is so awesome. That's incredible to hear your name with the speakers and know that you're going to play in the top eight and get a Pro Tour invite. And man, so a few things I want to dive into. Let's back up, I guess, first.
Yeah.
Leading up to the Grand Prix, what were you doing? What did your preparation look like? What did the play sessions look like? How did you make the most of your prep time so that you can make the most of the Grand Prix?
I had started playing the deck that I ended up playing, Malira Company. Like, a few months earlier, I picked it up, finally. Like, I'd played it off and on. You know, like I said, I go to my Monday night, I go to my local Modern night and just play whatever deck I want to play every week. But, So I'd had some general experience with the deck, and then, like, a few months earlier, I picked it up and was going to, like, Grand Prix or GPT. Not Grand Prix, but just whatever local events were Modern that I could go to that had a reason to play Modern at them. So I'd take the deck there and played it a few times. That was cool. There was an event, I think it was a GPT for LA. A friend of mine, like, he beat me. He had a very insane affinity draw where my turn two Kataki was too slow.
Whoa.
That's all I had. And then I had like natural combo, but it was just too slow to beat him. And he's like, why are you even playing that deck? That totally does not seem like your kind of deck. And I was like, this guy does not know me very well. Like, I like inevitability and grindiness and value. And this deck likes to cheese a win out of nowhere. Like, I can just play the fair game and win. Or I can just, here's a couple of guys that interact together and win the game. Just on the spot. Anyway, so I like that interaction. But, testing for the tournament, me and my friend Ricky, you know, he lives here in town as well. He's the guy that I was talking about that we went down there together with. We sleeved up a couple of meta decks and did some testing together for each of us. He was leaning towards, he wanted to play an aggressive strategy, so he wasn't sure if he wanted to play Burn or Zoo or the Burning Tree Emissary Zoo deck, which is different than the former, or Merfolk. Those are like the four decks he was thinking about. And I just wanted to play whatever deck I thought would be best. I frequently just fall back on Jund because it's just a good stuff deck. But so we got together like every night for a couple weeks when he had to get off work, and we just go to his house and we play these decks. We jam like six games unboarded, and then we'd talk about it a little bit, and then we'd board however we felt like we should board, and then we'd play a few more games like that, and then we'd talk about how we boarded, and then we'd make adjustments based on like what we both thought. It was kind of like, there was no set order to the number of these things, but like, that's just the overall process. And we would then, you know, after like 15 to 20 games, depending on the matchup and how it felt, we would then switch decks. He would switch to a different deck, and I'd keep playing this deck, is what I mean to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We did that every night for like 2 weeks leading up to the tournament.
That's awesome. That's really thorough. Every night you were playing different matchups. You were discussing the board choices. And so you're saying that you would board with any card you possibly wanted. And then I'm assuming you ended up with this big old list of cards that you boarded in these different matches. And then you would kind of pick the 15 from that. That would be your sideboard.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And then also, not only just that, but, like, we would, we would sideboard the way that we felt, like, on our own, and then we would discuss how we sideboarded and, like, inform each other's sideboard decisions and be like, no, I don't think this card's good in that matchup, we should try it like this, and I'll jam some games like this. Or the classic, well, let's see if this card's any good, let's put that card in the opening hand and then draw six, or whatever.
Okay.
Just various things like that, depending on how bad the matchup felt, or just based on feeling.
Yeah, that's good. That's cool. All right, so you did your preparation. Thank you for diving into what that looked like. I'm always interested in that so I can get better when I go to the next event. I know the Prodigies really appreciate that behind-the-scenes look as well. And then you go to the event, you talked about that and leading up to making it to top eight. So now that you're in the top eight, you got a Pro Tour invite, right?
Yes.
Which Pro Tour are you invited to?
I was invited to Eldritch Moon, but I got a deferral to go to Kaladesh in Honolulu this October.
Because of the whole passport thing?
I can neither confirm or deny if that was a factor.
Okay, cool. All right, so you'll be headed off to your first Pro Tour in a couple of months here?
Yeah.
Right, it's in September, right?
October 14th, a week after my birthday. So it's like a birthday present to myself.
Awesome. There you go. So about 1 month after this goes live, you'll be out there enjoying sunny Hawaii, playing at your first Pro Tour. So what are you going to do for the Pro Tour? Like, is it going to be your first one? Are you linking up with some Pro Tour veterans? And what's your thought process going into your first Pro Tour?
Terrified.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be hooking up with any veterans. So if they want some newbie to this to be added to their team, hit me up. I'm all available. I'm all ears. I'm open to everything. But yeah, I'll probably try to find some people that are also qualified to test with. I'm hoping, you know, some friends somehow, you know, top 8 a GP or X2 a GP between now and then. There's not very many, so that they can be on the team with me just for the comfort level being raised. But like, no, for Australia, I was talking with some guys that I didn't know very well in Portland and stuff, and we were going to test together, but slowly but surely they all fell apart, or not fell apart, but like got deferrals or just decided to just not go and didn't ask for deferrals. And so I was left with nobody to test with. So it was going to be just me, which was very nerve-wracking. And I am guessing it won't be too different this time, but yeah, just going to be getting together with every friend that I can and just trying to brew and jam games as hard as I can and figure out the draft format as much as I can before I go over there. And, you know, hopefully I'll connect with some people that are also qualified and we'll be able to benefit each other and help each other. I'll help you up and you help me up, that type of thing. This community is it's a good thing, very important. So hopefully I can just find that.
Well, there may not be a lot of Pro Tour qualified people in the group yet, but the MTG Pro Tutor group is really good support system. So you're more than welcome to join us there on Facebook, and maybe you can find some friendly faces to play against at least. And like I said, we're working on getting, you know, some people qualified for the Pro Tour, but it's a good place to start at least. So.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll check that out.
So how has your Magic playing changed with your success? Has it put a fire in you and now you're going to be doing more, or you like the level that you're at and you think it's effective, you're going to keep doing that? Like, what's changed since you've, you know, top 8 at Grand Prix, for example?
Well, I'm kind of split on where I want to focus my energies and time. Right now, I am recording a new album. Like, this was already planned and set up before I top 8ed that I was going to be recording a new album August and September, and then the plan was to go on tour in October, like the beginning of October through Thanksgiving or so, maybe a little later, somewhere in that ballpark. Then I top 8ed, was going to the Pro Tour, and then I thought, well, you know, I should just try to make a run at the club. I hadn't been playing a lot of competitive Magic on that scale the previous year, so that was, I don't know, I didn't really have enough pro points to make an actual run at the club before it ended last week. So figured I'll try to make a run for it the next year, and I'll kind of put music on the side a little bit more than I would want to. But kind of at a crossroads of figuring out how to make both of these things work. Because in the past, when I have done the touring with the music, I can't do either one at 100% if they're both taking my attention. Like, when I'm on the road, I can't actually test for the Grand Prix or whatever. I have to just do theory crafting in my head and talking with my friends on the phone, reading articles on the internet, all that type of stuff, and just theory craft what I should play and how I should build the sideboard, etc. So it's not as productive there. And then, you know, in other ways, it takes away from the touring, not being able to focus on the booking and whatever else happens there. But this is a Magic podcast. Let's focus there. Yeah. What was the question?
Just how your playing has changed with your success.
It hasn't. I make jokes to my friends to annoy them, like egotistical comments about referring to myself as the end boss and stuff like that. One of my friends in particular, the one that went with me, it drives him crazy.
What kind of albums do you write?
It's very emotional music, little sad boy stuff. The genre is like folk punk or anti-folk. Yeah, it's inspired by emo and scrams and screamo and hardcore, and a little bit of grind influences. Like, I like a lot of different kinds of music, but the thing that really matters to me is the emotion and the honesty to the music.
Yeah.
And that's just really what I try to do, is just write honest songs for honest people.
Man, I just think, how cool would it be if you could combine like your music and magic and do like a, you know, like the Grand Prix tour, and you're like the, I don't know, the unofficial official, like, you know, music of the Pro Tour or something like that. And you go to different Grand Prix and you put on like a concert on Sunday night or Saturday night or something for all the Grand Prix attendees and stuff. And so you can get your magic and your music in. Like, that'd be kind of cool.
That'd be pretty sweet. For like, there's a lot of people that just know me from the music side of my life. And when I talk to them about magic, when I mention, oh yeah, going to this magic tournament this weekend or whatever, that's what they think I am doing.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Pretty good.
That's neat. That's neat. So yeah, so because when in the bio when we talked about how you're going to make a run for the Pro Club this season, what does that mean? What does that look like? That means that are you like, hey, I'm going to attend however many Grand Prix it takes to get there, or I'm going to attend like X amount this year, or like, what does that mean when you make a run for you? Like, what does that look like for you?
For me, I'm going to try to attend as many Grand Prix as I can afford, as my wallet will allow me to go to. In some ways, it kind of looks like the better choice to do the touring and magic thing at the same time, because it's just a much more efficient, for me, it feels like a much more efficient way to travel, like, financially, because I can try to, not that music is, like, a very big, like, it's not a consistent source of income. You don't know if you're going to make any money when you go to play a show with the world how it is these days. But overall, you know, I do usually break even. I can pay for my gas, I can pay for my travel expenses. I'm not like, as far as like income goes, I'd probably be better off 9-to-5 random job, but that's a lot cheaper when I frame it like that of, you know, I'm paying for my travel costs when I go on tour. That's a lot cheaper than just throwing $300 away on a plane ticket to go to, you know, Denver, Colorado for a magic tournament or something.
All right, neat. So we wish you the best of luck in your run for the Pro Club this season. Like, the season's already started, right? So do you have any Pro Points?
Grand Prix Portland was the first weekend of the Pro Point season.
Okay.
So I'm off to a rocky start with zero.
There's plenty of... Hey, they upped the amount of Grand Prix that they have. So you have plenty of options this year coming. So it's all right. It's all right. Just, you know, shaking off the cobwebs, I guess. So
yeah.
What would you say is your best or your favorite format, Eric?
Legacy.
Oh.
I've had the most success there. I mean, just a couple of Star City games, open top eights or whatever, under their old format. But still Legacy, probably.
So what do you play in Legacy? You just play one deck, or do you kind of switch it up?
I switch around a bit. Primarily, though, I do tend towards Delver archetypes. Both of those top eights were with Blue-Red Delver. One when it was bad, and one when it was the only deck in the format. The Treasure Cruise and all that.
So what would you say to someone who is brand new to Legacy? Let's say they're just getting in, they want to start playing Legacy. What's some real beginner entry-level tips for a Legacy player?
Quit before it's too late. No. good entry-level tips. It's probably best to play a deck with Force of Will in it when you're first coming into the format. Even though you don't know what to counter, if your opponent plays a spell, never hesitate to, hey, can I read that? Never hesitate to read your opponent's spells. Don't be worried about looking dumb. It doesn't matter how hard you try to pull off that you know what you're doing when you just start. They know you don't know what you're doing. So just embrace that and put your ego aside and just, hey, can I read your card? All right, cool. That's what it does. And if you can't understand what the card does, it's probably bad for you and you should counter it. just pick a deck that focuses
so
on
true.
Your own game plan.
So
yeah.
True. I have not played Legacy. Okay, I played one game of Legacy and I won. So I'm 100% on all my Legacy matches in my life. So that's pretty good. I hopped on to do some playtesting with a friend. He's like, here, play this. I'm like, what is this? He's like, Legacy. I'm like, okay. He gave me like a Storm deck. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just casting stuff. I'm like, what am I supposed to be searching for? I'm like, oh, Ad Nauseam. I recognize that from Modern. And I cast that. I ended up winning, but whatever. But what you just said rings true, because when I play EDH with my friend who got me back into Magic, he has some busted commander decks. He'd cast something, I'd read it, and I say, okay. And then, you know, like, he just, you know, I let it resolve or whatever. Not that I had any counter spells, but anyways, exactly what you said. I read the card. I didn't really understand it. I said, okay. And then And then I died. And like the next turn or two turns later, he plays something else. And then, okay, this and this and then A plus B plus C equals you're dead. And that was how it was. So I love how you said that. If you don't understand it, you should probably counter it.
Yeah. I think Merfolk or any Delver variant is a good place to start.
That's awesome. All right, cool. So play a deck with Force of Will in it. Don't be afraid to ask to read your opponent's cards. Put your ego aside and just, you know, read the cards and learn. And if you don't understand it, counter it. And at least that's good, a good starter. Like we said, some good starter tips. And then as you get better and better, then you can learn, okay, I can let this one slide and I'll counter the next one or whatever. But those are some really good starter tips. I love how you were able to just boil that down. So thank you. Man, and you are an expert traveler because you go on the road for your music, not only for Magic, but when you travel for Magic, what do you actually take with you? What is inside your tournament bag?
Yeah, so say I'm heading up to Portland right now. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go fly to a tournament and go there. Cool. I take one backpack with me. It'll have one, maybe two extra changes of clothes that I probably will not put on at any point during the tournament or the trip. And then I have like my deck box with my deck in it. Maybe there's an occasion where I'm thinking of playing a second deck, so I'll have that second deck. And then I'll have another deck, an additional deck box with all the cards that I might play. Traditionally, people probably use their binder for that, but, you know, I don't really do the trading thing anymore. I got burned a couple times a long time ago, or, like, got talked into making trades that I didn't want to do, or, like, trading off cards I didn't want to trade, rather. The deals were fine, they were even, but either way, so I don't mess with that. I'm not going to the tournament to trade. I'm going there to win. So I just bring the deck that I'm playing, and I usually don't even bring a deck for side events. I just bring the deck I'm playing because I'm going to make day two and I'm going to win the event. That's the goal. That's the mindset. Just got to think like Owen Turtenwald and you'll be your Owen Turtenwald, right? That's how it works.
Yeah, hey, that's how it works.
So yeah, I just have that stuff. And then sometimes I'll bring a toothbrush. Sometimes I'll just acquire one when I get there.
Do you have a particular favorite type of deck box?
I believe the brand is Legion. It's like Legion. It's just the classic, you know, it's just a classic deck box, and it's got a rainbow and a unicorn on it. You may recognize it from the sleeves that they also produce of the same design.
Oh, very cool, very cool.
So that for years though, I used there was a deck box that was given out like, thanks for signing up for this Grand Prix. Here's your reward. For Grand Prix San Antonio in 2013, it was the weekend after Thanksgiving. I was on tour, spent Thanksgiving with an acquaintance friend of mine from music life, and I went to the tournament, and I was playing Bant Control, that was in Return to Ravnica, Innistrad Standard, and I got 17th, it was my best finish at the time, and so for the longest time I used that deck box. It started falling apart like a year or so ago, so now I just have it here, hanging out, keeping me company.
What's your favorite playmat?
Similar story. The main playmat that I use actually is not the Grand Prix LA one. That one is ugly, and despite being my best accomplishment, I use a different playmat for a similar reason as I should use this one. My Grand Prix Chicago, November 11th, 2012 Grand Prix. That playmat, there's a Merfolk person in the water, and then there's like the Chicago skyline above that.
Oh,
and,
that's cool.
Yeah, that was a modern Grand Prix, and I was on tour, and I decided to play blue white mid range. This was Return to Ravnica just came out. There was somebody that played Storm there with Epic Experiment. I remember there was like a deck tech on that at the tournament. I lost my potential winning in for top eight at that tournament. I would have gotten ninth. That's what my opponent got anyway when he beat me. But even though I placed higher at the San Antonio, I wasn't playing a winning in in that last round. Me and my opponent unintentionally drew. It was my only draw of the tournament, and I got 17th. But this other tournament, I got like 24th in or something like that. I don't know, 20 something. But I lost playing for top eight, mm-hmm. And that just felt pretty good, especially since I was such a new player and such. So I still just use that playmat as luck.
That's awesome. Yeah, I like it when the playmats kind of incorporate the city. Like, I love the Archangel Avacyn playmat of Madrid, right? And then it flips over and it's the burning Madrid. Like, I think that's so cool. Like, I would love that playmat. That's really cool.
I definitely like the custom playmats.
Yeah, that's really... Yeah, as opposed to just the stock card art.
Here's the art of a card you don't care about. Like, I went to Grand Prix Kansas City 2013. It's like, the card, I think, was called Showstopper. Out of, like, Dragon's Maze or something. So it's there's, like, a jester on it. Not very cool art. No, no offense. Artist who drew it. You're great. But yeah, boring playmat.
Well, do you have any activities that you feel help you get better at Magic? Any habits or actions or things that you do on a daily basis?
I think I definitely have the opposite of that. poor diet, abnormal sleep schedule, and consumption of way too many sugary products such as Monster and Red Bull. I don't think that those actually help. They feel like they help, like, at the time. Like, I don't really feel the effects of, like, the energy boost per se, but, like, it gets me articulating my thoughts a little bit better. But then, no matter what, by the end of the day, or, you know, a few rounds in, my mind starts to get spacey and hard to focus sometimes. And I think that is directly linked to the energy drinks and the poor diet. But that is not the question. Good habits that help me get better. Not a ton. I think that there are aspects of playing guitar that would maybe incorporate into me playing better Magic. Just, you know, in the classic problem-solving method of, like, you know, I'm kind of like just thinking of it as you're doing math and trying to figure out the problem. Like, all right, I'm just jamming around, just playing guitar absentmindedly. Oh, wait, this is cool. How did I do that? All right, figured out what I did. Cool. Now, how do I expand upon that? How do I make this better? All right, and so I try to, like, start going off in a creative thing and try to figure out what to do better or whatever. And I think in that aspect, there's some similarities that could translate well there. And I do play a lot of guitar.
Oh, as you should, as a musician. That's awesome. Going back to the diet, I would recommend pumpkin seed bars, because I learned that pumpkin seeds help your brain, as does blueberries and chocolate. So you can get, like, chocolate-covered blueberries, dark chocolate-covered blueberries specifically, and pumpkin seed bars. And we actually just finished up a giveaway not too long ago, and I included these brain snacks, I call them, in the giveaway, because, you know, I really think that aspect of a long term in day, keeping your body fueled as well as your keeping your body fueled is important, and giving your mind what it needs as well. So
I guess the other thing that's in my backpack, going back to that question, when I'm traveling, is like some mountain trail mix, actually.
Oh yes,
like almonds and raisins and M&Ms or whatever.
Yeah, perfect.
Just various things like that. But yeah, no, actually, whenever I'm on tour and I have a big Magic tournament coming up, I'll call my dad because he's a big health nut. I'll be like, hey, I got this Magic tournament coming up in a couple days. What should I be eating? What are good brain foods? Because I can apparently never remember from event to event.
That's funny. And he's like, yeah, you know, 3 months ago when I told you probably should have started running? Like, that would have been a good time to start. Anyways, cool. Well, as we pull into the home stretch, prodigies out there, I want to remind you, if you want to connect with Eric, the best place to do that is on social media. You can find his Magic-related stuff on Twitter at Platypus Island. So look him up there. And Eric, do you have any parting piece of guidance for us? Either something that you've already said that you want to emphasize, or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Never be afraid to make mistakes and look foolish. Just a general thing in life. Just don't... Don't let your dreams be dreams. A lot of people, that they have dreams. They have things that they want to accomplish, things that they would like to do with their life, but they're always, oh, no, I'll just go to school. I'll just go start this career. I'll just get settled in. I'll just go get married. I'll just go and, get financially set up for a while first, and then I'll do that later. But, you know, I just got to make sure I go to this job every day. You know, just doing all these things. You can just live for a living. That is an option. Money is out there. I know that people talk about how bad unemployment is all the time, and, you know, economy stuff, politics, whatever. There's always a bad job that somebody is offering if you really need money. So money's out there. Money's always out there. Just follow your dreams. Do the things that you want to do in your life before you're too old and decrepit and don't want to do them anymore. Don't be on your deathbed being like, man, I really wish I would have drove across the United States 10 plus times when I was younger. But now I can't because I'm dying. You know, just do the things that you love. Don't hold back on that. And more importantly, make sure the people that you care about know how much you care about them before you can't. That's an important thing. Don't take things and people for granted.
Wow. Eric, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. We could keep on talking for hours, I'm sure, but I want to acknowledge you as a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Eric, for coming on the show. I learned a lot. Prodigies, I'm sure you did as well. And as always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Eric Carson. And that's Eric with a K. You'll find a synopsis of everything we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. And before we wrap things up today, I do want to remind you that Wizards is running a fundraiser for a really great cause right now. They are supporting the Miracle Children's Hospital Network. And as Prodigies, we can come together and show our support in that as well. So if you are interested, Wizards is doing a few really cool events in support of this fundraiser. The first one is called Ask Wizards. tinyurl.com/AskWizards is where you can go for that. And by donating there, you can ask Richard Garfield, Mark Rosewater, and Ian Duke, to name a few, some questions. And that'll be running until September 7th is when Ask Wizards is. And then their 24-hour stream is on September 17th. So in preparation for that, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/donate. And as the Pro Tutor Prodigy community, we can show our support. Well, thanks so much for joining me today. I, as always, love doing this for you. Super excited that you're here, you're listening, you're learning, you're growing, and we are all moving forward together. Can't wait to the next episode. We have some great guests coming up, so stay tuned. I'm Sean Penrod, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.